Welcome to the We've Seen a Thing or Two podcast. As investigators and mediators focused on regulatory and workplace conflicts, we have seen a thing or two and learned a thing or two. In each episode, we will be speaking with industry leaders in regulation, human resources and law, as well as thought leaders and top performers in investigations and mediation. We bring our audience interesting and cutting-edge information on conflict management as it relates to professional regulation and workplace disputes. This industry is one of many views, and we have to say that some views shared by our guests are not necessarily shared by the We've Seen a Thing or Two podcast, its host, or sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Bernard & Associates, trusted investigation and mediation professionals since 2004. Now here's your host, Dean Bernard.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show and thank you for listening. Now, today's guest is not only an accomplished expert on professional regulation, but also a really good friend of mine and a colleague that I've enjoyed working with on so many projects. He's currently serving as the Deputy Registrar at the Home Construction Regulatory Authority in Ontario, Canada, and he is the current President of the Council on Licensure Enforcement and Regulation. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is an international association focused on professional and occupational regulation. So many of you will know already, but for those of you who don't, I'm going to confirm my guest is none other than Mark Spector. Welcome, Mark, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Dean, thank you for that. Thank you for those words. Thank you for making me blush. This is the best part of my day.
Well, if nothing else, I want you to feel good after this. So Mark and I have had many discussions on what we would talk about when we finally got around to doing this podcast. And it seemed that we had so many discussions, and between that and our busy schedules, we never seemed to get it nailed down. And so finally, we just said, you know what, let's just have a conversation and see where we go. So that's the plan today, folks. Right now, I can't even tell you for sure what we're going to talk about. I got a few ideas in my mind, questions I want to ask, but we'll see where this takes us. And to kick things off, I guess, because I am the host and you're the guest, Mark, I suppose perhaps I should probably open with a question for you. So here's my thinking. I see you as a leader. You're definitely a regulatory leader. And on that subject of regulatory leadership, can you share with us some insights for people on leading regulatory teams, maybe some lessons learned? I mean, what's it like being a leader in this industry?
A way to start with a softball. I guess everybody's journey is different. I can only explain my own. And this is probably part of my story where it's changed the most over the years, where I've probably learned most about myself and that kind of self-reflection. And I now oversee a team of about 50, and I learn from them almost every single day. I learn both from what they teach me, but I also learn in my interactions with them a little bit about me. And maybe just one example that comes to mind. I remember one day, it was a Monday. I had just come back from a CLEAR conference. I was in the staff kitchen. People were milling about. Everyone's getting coffee. And a colleague came up to me and goes, Mark, how was your weekend? And I said, it was great. I came back from a CLEAR conference. I learned about artificial intelligence. I learned some great things that they were doing in Louisiana and an initiative in Australia. And don't even get me started about what's happening in Ireland. And I went on, and I meant it. I was very, very excited. And the person was listening diligently until I finished. And I said, well, how was your weekend? And their response was, it was great. My daughter, she just turned 5. It was amazing. We had all the kids. We had a piñata. We had a clown. And Mark, you should have looked her in the face, and you've never seen such a smile. And wow, what a different kind of story that was. And for me, that was a changing moment. That was a lost opportunity for me to make a connection, to communicate, to go where someone is, you know, where they are, and see it from their perspective. And it was a valuable lesson for me that I've tried never, ever to forget.
Yeah, it's so important that we realize that regardless of what we do, we're human beings. We have lives, we have passions, we have things that are happening that we have to, you know, good leaders embrace that, right? Good leaders work with that, and not just for show, but demonstrate genuinely a desire to understand what people's lives are like and what they bring, because it's those lives that bring those unique perspectives to what we do.
I'm so glad you just said that, because we know, now that I think about it, not only does it make me a better leader, hopefully a better human being, but it makes us think about, well, what about those consumers out there, those patients, those persons that we think about great regulation and their families and how they interact with us and each other. I hadn't actually thought about that until you just mentioned it, but you're right.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, when we think about leadership in general, and this is maybe just a little bit of a tangent, but anybody who knows me knows I'm not afraid to do that. But I think back to my first job where I was a leader. I was a manager of a team of roughly 25 people. And I was leaving that position to start my company over 20 years ago. And somebody said to me, "You've done a lot of different things. You were an emergency room nurse. You were a police officer, and you've done this job, and now you're going to start. What's the hardest job you ever had of all of these?" And I said, "This one."
Really?
Because whenever I was working as a nurse, I knew what I needed to do. Whenever I was working as a police officer, I knew what I needed to do. Whenever I was leading people, there were question marks. There were always questions. How do I lead people in a way that benefits them, benefits the organization, benefits everybody? And I think really at the heart of it, it is understanding those people, getting to know them on that level that allows you to really connect. And yeah, I think the hardest thing for any leader is learning those lessons, right?
Yeah. And you think about them, you want to know, are you doing right by them? Did you have a good day? Did you support someone? Or did you inadvertently let them down and think you can do better tomorrow? Think about that all the time.
Yeah, no, 100%. Now, of course, we're talking about leadership, and everybody who knows you and anybody who's involved in regulation knows that you're really a regulatory thought leader, right? I mean, you're the president of CLEAR currently. You knew I was going to bring that into play. But as the president of CLEAR and as a person who has shared your thoughts on regulation and really good thoughts, insights, talk to me a little bit about that challenge of taking on the leadership and regulation that sort of goes beyond the day-to-day and looks at the bigger picture. What's that been like?
Maybe I can phrase it this way. There's no school of regulation. We all kind of either fall into it, or it's been a calling and a passion, but there's no one way of doing it. We all have our own story. And for me, it started off of two careers. One being a lawyer supporting regulators, and then finally drinking the Kool-Aid and joining them and to lead them. And I remember how much I didn't know, or at least I thought I didn't know, and just striving to want to learn and do more. I remember my very first CLEAR conference. It was in San Francisco. I don't want to tell you how long ago it was, but I was showed up. There was maybe 600 regulators from around the world, and I was in awe. And they just seemed so cool to me. And I loved the discussion. I couldn't participate, mind you, because I just didn't feel like I was on that level. But just taking it in, like such a fan. But I also remember how interested I was, but also how strangely isolated I felt. Almost lonely, that I feel this. I have some anxieties, questions I want to ask, but I felt almost embarrassed to ask them. So that was my very first CLEAR conference, and taken away with awe and humility. And over the years, I just kept going and started making relationships, making friends, learning new things and hearing about different ventures and ideas and opening and expanding my mind. And with that, I became somehow part of a community of sharing and collaboration and like-minded people, or like-minded people but with different views. And one of the questions I get often asked now is, what's it like at the CLEAR board? What's happening behind the scenes?
I wondered that myself.
And I can tell you, it's amazing. It's almost like the way I describe it. It's like Wolf Blitzer in the war room at CNN. There's information coming from literally around the world with titans in their industry and amazing people at what they do. And sitting around the board table, the level of discussion and thoughtfulness, it's amazing. And often we agree, sometimes we don't. And that level of agreement or disagreement or thoughtfulness, what an engaging, energizing discussion. And now as CLEAR's president and leading those discussions, well, now I'm back to where I began, feeling quite humble and almost shy to contribute to that, but it's honestly been the best experience of my life.
Oh, that's incredible. And people who know me know I'm a pretty sort of outgoing and gregarious kind of person, but I honestly couldn't see myself in that position. I have a lot of respect for people who are willing to take that on, because being in that role as president of an organization like Clear is a daunting task. You know, you want to live up to the past presidents that have helped to lead the organization and work with those people. Like, there's a lot of responsibility there. And I admire the fact that you've taken that on.
Well, you're kind. So you're right in that there's a legacy and nobody wants to screw up. Nobody wants to be that person and be remembered. But I try to remember, why are we doing this? What the art of the possible is. Think about the kind of regulator and leader that I'd like to be. And as you and I both are in front of a microphone right now, I think neither one of us has seen a microphone we didn't like.
Very true. And
here we are.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, what I love about this is you've just given me the great sort of opportunity for a segue into another question for you, because you talked about legacy, you talked about where we're going. And I've heard you talk a lot about regulatory change. What does the future of regulation look like? Where are we going? I mean, what are the changes that we should be expecting to see, whether they be part of a conduct-related piece or policy development piece, legislative change? I mean, regulation is, I think, undergoing rapid change all over the place. What are your thoughts about the changing world of regulation?
I remember when I entered the field of regulation many years ago, and back then, people were talking about regulation and change. People will always talk about regulation and change, and rightly so. We should always be forward-thinking and anticipating evolving trends, 100%. But one thing that I've noticed, the velocity of change has really come to an entirely different level. And maybe just an example of where I've seen that happen. You and I, it wasn't much longer than a year ago, I think. We were in Savannah at a Clear Symposium on regulation and technology. And I remember you were on a panel with three others. And I think it was a room of about, I don't know, about 65 regulators from around the world. And you asked the question, who in this room has ever heard of ChatGPT? This was a year ago. And I don't know if the 65 people, maybe a third raised their hands, and some of them quite tentatively. And then you went on and you said, well, if you haven't heard of it, you soon will. And that was a year ago. And I can tell you, I just returned from another symposium in Tucson, entirely dedicated to artificial intelligence, technology, and regulation. An entire conference dedicated to this, including ChatGPT. So in the space of a year, we went from, let's say, 20% of the regulators in the room had heard about it, maybe, to it's dominating the whole discussion about where we've been, the art of the possible, where we're going. That's both exciting and terrifying at the same time.
100%. And you know, I say 100% a lot. That's okay. But it's true. I'm amazed, obviously, by where technology is going. And one of the things that I keep hearing is the fear that people have. People are concerned that with the advent of AI, the application of AI to regulatory processes, that the human touch might start to be missed, that the understanding of the fact that we are most often dealing with very human problems and people who have very significant concerns. And we have to deal with those people sometimes, always really, in a caring and thoughtful way, while at the same time accomplishing our goals. And I think a lot of people are fearful that AI is going to change that somehow. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. How do we balance it?
Well, funny you asked that question. That was the very topic of that conference I just came back from. And one line really stuck with me. There were a few. One was, AI is not going to replace people. The people who understand AI are. So that was one. And another one that really stuck with me was the line from a panel member, the betrayal. And what she was referring to was her 16-year-old daughter was texting her, and she didn't know that that teenager was using ChatGPT to talk to her mom, and she found out. So both the promise, but also the peril of artificial intelligence.
Yes, there's certainly a lot to be considered, and I think it's going to be a topic of discussion at many conferences and symposia to come. So Let me move on from there, because there's another phrase that I've heard you use. In fact, I would argue you probably coined this phrase. I don't know if you're willing to be so bold as to say you did, but I haven't heard it from anybody but you. But you've often made the comment about the need to ensure that we are engaging in relevant regulation. So you've talked a little bit about this. Can you share with the audience a little more about what do you mean when you say relevant regulation?
Yeah, I can answer this one easily. Do we actually make a meaningful difference in people's lives? Do we actually matter? Are we relevant to them? Are we organizations that people can actually see themselves in, that they go to as a trusted and credible source? Seeing regulation through their eyes rather than our own. To me, that's what relevant regulation looks and what it feels like.
Yeah, that's very important, because one of my concerns about regulation in general for many, many years has simply been the fact that do the people regulators are there to protect truly connect with and know that regulators exist? Do they know to go to a regulator? Something can't be relevant if people don't know it's there. And to me, that's just at the foundation of being relevant.
100% true. I think studies show that maybe 90% of the public does not know that regulators exist or what regulators do to protect them. And if they do know, do they think that regulators do a good job? Or how do they use it in their daily lives? I bet you the vast majority would say, I talk to my best friend for a recommendation. Or they go online and Google their practitioner or service provider to find out what their reputation is like. And like it or not, that may not be reliable or objective information, but it's how they're viewing regulation. And regulators need to come to consumers where they are and find a way to resonate with them and maybe incorporate some of those thoughts. And maybe we're the ones that need to pivot a little bit more than we have.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, Mark, listen, I've got another question for you. And don't worry, nobody's listening. Okay, so I want you to share with me a guilty pleasure, perhaps, that you have. And again, don't worry, it's just between us.
So some may know me as being quite prim, quite proper, but what they may not know about me is that I absolutely adore Rocky movies. And to me, there's not a bad Rocky movie. Even the bad Rocky movies are great. And I can sit and binge watch from the original Rocky all the way up and then back down again and be perfectly, perfectly happy.
Okay. Now, you're preaching to the converted here, because I, too, am a huge Rocky fan, but I got to ask you, even Rocky V?
In minimal doses.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I, too, am a big Rocky fan. But tell me this, though. Why? What is it about the Rocky movies that works for you?
Other than the great theme song, and that probably resonates with a lot of us, Rocky feels like every person, everyone who's ever been looked over, underestimated, given up on, fighting against seemingly insurmountable odds. In some ways, and I almost see Rocky as a love story. It's a love story about a passion, about a man's wife, and about keep reaching for that rainbow. And I just love that message. I find it gratifying every time I watch it.
I love it. And what's interesting too, a lot of people don't know this, and I won't go on and on, but what I find incredible about that is the story of Rocky translates to the story of Sylvester Stallone, who wrote Rocky, who also had to overcome insurmountable odds. It's kind of interesting that a person trying to make it and live that dream wrote a movie about that, which ultimately allowed him to live his dream. I just find that sort of connection amazing.
I didn't know that story, but I wonder if that's why it feels almost so authentic to people, because it's real. It's real life.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I lied. I'm sure there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that are listening to this. So your secret is now out, Mark. There's nothing we could do about that. Look, I know you're a busy guy. I really want to thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. It's hard. You know, it's funny. We've been doing this podcast now we're going into our fourth season.
Wow.
We took a little break toward the second half of the third season. We just got too busy. But it's hard to get people to agree to come on to the podcast sometimes. It's asking a lot. And so I really want to just convey my heartfelt thanks to you for agreeing to do this. I know that our listeners will appreciate some of the insightful things you've said and are going to have questions for you. So How can people connect with you?
I love to engage with people on LinkedIn. I message there occasionally. And please reach out. eCoffee, always very, very welcome. Dean, thank you. I love this. Always a pleasure. And I'm hope that we can do this again.
Oh, we will. We absolutely will. All right, folks, that's it for this episode. Thanks again for listening. Please send us your comments and suggestions. Your feedback really does help us. I want to keep bringing you interesting and helpful content with each new episode that we produce, and it helps to get your feedback on that. Now, just so you know, all our podcasts are on the Bernard & Associates YouTube channel, which is Bernard Associates, all one word. So check it out there if you want to go back and look at older episodes. And there's also a lot more on that YouTube channel to explore that some of you may find interesting. If you want to reach out to me, you can get me by email at dbernard@bernardinc.com or Dean Bernard on LinkedIn. So with that, all the best to you folks. We'll see you next time on the We've Seen a Thing or Two podcast.
Take care.
Bye-bye.